Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, May 19, 2016. The United Nations mission in South Sudan says transitional justice can bring lasting peace to the country.
It is really important to highlight and to emphasize that you cannot really have a sustainable reconciliation if justice is not taken into account.
And rights groups say perpetrators of rape and other sexual crimes during South Sudan's conflict have not been arrested.
There is no evidence of a single effective prosecution, and I think that in of itself, says a lot.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. UN official is calling on South Sudan's transitional government of national unity to improve the environment so that transitional justice mechanism can be implemented as is stipulated in the peace agreement. The head of the Human Rights Division of the United Nations mission in South Sudan says thousands of people still remain in UN camps across the country. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Eugen Nandorera, the UNMISS Director for Human Rights, is calling on leaders of the Transitional Government of National Unity to show political will and proof that South Sudanese no longer need to stay in hiding at the UN camps. Nandorera also wants leaders from the government and armed opposition to ensure free movement of human rights workers so they can access remote areas hard hit by the conflict, another requirement stipulated in the peace accord. At this week's press briefing in Juba, Nandorera told the reporters many obstacles remain with only a few months to go before for the implementation of justice mechanism is supposed to begin.
The situation that we have now is really better than the one that we had in South Sudan at the end of 2013 or in 2014. But does it mean that the environment is perfect? The answer is no. There is a lot to be done, because there are still a lot of challenges. And we have to identify those challenges and try to be as objective as possible.
Nandorera says now is the time for South Sudan's leaders to improve conditions for implementing the transitional justice mechanism. More than 180,000 internally displaced persons still live at UNMISS camps across the country, more than 8 months after the parties signed a peace deal to end the conflict. Chapter 5 of the peace deal requires the transitional government to implement a transitional justice mechanism, a set of judicial measures to bring to account individuals suspected of committing gross human rights abuses during the fighting. The peace agreement requires the transitional government to establish, within 6 months of its formation, a commission for truth, reconciliation and healing, a hybrid court and a compensation and a reparations authority to spearhead implementation of the transitional justice mechanism. Nandorera says lasting peace will only happen if victims of crimes know that justice has been served.
It is really important to highlight and to emphasize that you cannot really have a sustainable reconciliation if justice is not taken into account.
Nandorera says the leaders of both sides must stop the pockets of fighting that continue in parts of the country and move on with implementing the justice mechanism. He says UNMISS will help.
UNMISS is planning to support the Abri Court in various areas, such as to provide expertise on requests, share information on human rights violations, assist the transitional government in conducting awareness raising and civic education on Abri Court mandates.
Ajo Noel Julius, a South Sudanese practicing lawyer and a lecturer at the College of Law at the University of Juba, says supporters of implementing the peace deal, such as the United Nations and other international players, should first focus on parliament.
It is too early for us to begin saying, well, why is the transitional government not establishing this? Without the parliament, as I said earlier on, the parliament is the pot where all these reforms, all justice issues are to be cooked from. So without having the law, then we cannot be talking of transitional justice. So first of all, let's establish the parliament. Once the parliament is established, we have to engage on the process of having the legislation initiated by the transitional government.
Julius agrees that perpetrators of human rights abuses during the conflict must be held accountable.
If they claim to be innocent, they should be able to hand them freely themselves to the jurisdiction of the Highbury Court so that they clean their names. You know, if they're not responsible, they are found innocent and they are, you know, they're free to go with their lives. If they are found guilty, they must be held accountable. I think we need to break on the culture of impunity.
The fighting broke out in late 2013 after a split within the ruling SPLM party. The conflict quickly spread across the country, leaving tens of thousands of unarmed civilians dead. For VOA, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Two South Sudanese rights groups say no one is being held responsible for the wave of rape and other sexual crimes seen in South Sudan since the country's conflict began in the late 2013. VOA's Jill Craig files from Nairobi.
Annette is a first responder helping rape victims among women sheltering at a UN base in Juba, the South Sudanese capital. Annette, who prefers to be identified by first name only, says the number of rape cases each month has skyrocketed since 2013.
Before, it used to happen, but it wasn't so rampant like that. Cases would come, but in a month you'd find that only one, two, or even none. You know? But now again, like for this period, it has increased. A month, I would say, an average of 30 to 40.
Annette's experience is a reflection of the sexual and gender-based violence taking place across the country. And according to Legal Action Worldwide and the South Sudan Law Society, members of security or militia groups are responsible for much of the violence. David Deng is the research director of the South Sudan Law Society.
I think evidence points to its use as a way of punishing communities, so collective punishment. And this is on all sides, you know, whether communities feel as though they're doing it to defend the rights of their communities or sort of as a more proactive punishment.
The South Sudan Law Society and Legal Action Worldwide released a report on sexual violence in South Sudan Thursday in Nairobi. The report says government and rebel forces, militias aligned to both sides, and unidentified uniformed men are reported to have committed rape, gang rape, murder, abduction, sexual assault, stripping, sexual slavery, castration, and forced abortion. Men, women, and children have all been victimized, particularly in Unity State, although women and girls are most at risk. Another group, the South Sudan Protection Cluster, says there were 1,300 rapes and 1,600 abductions of women and children between April and September of 2015. But verifying this number and figures released by other organizations is problematic, says Deng.
We don't even have any information on the basis of this figure. You know, it's just these figures which are seemingly pulled out of thin air, and there's no really way to assess the credibility of them.
South Sudan lacks a formal justice system that is accessible to the wider population. Traditional justice systems may function in conflict zones, but they are ill-equipped to handle sexual violence cases, which are often perceived as communal and not individual issues. And they are unable to hold government, rebel, or security forces to account, according to Antonia Mulvey, executive director of Legal Action Worldwide. When these entities act with impunity and are not held to account for their actions, the victims do not receive justice, says Deng.
There is no evidence of a single effective prosecution, and I think that in of itself, you know, says a lot.
To seek accountability from the perpetrators, the report's authors recommend legal and institutional reforms, proper vetting of security forces, and a means for the survivors to seek justice, such as through the formation of a hybrid court capable of trying war crimes. They also urge the drafting and passage of a sexual and gender-based violence bill. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
And in Khartoum, three international rights groups are condemning the recent arrest and detention of a dozen Sudanese student activists who took part in recent protests at the University of Khartoum. The International Federation for Human Rights, the World Organization Against Torture, and the African Center for Justice and Peace Studies criticized the Sudanese authorities for denying students access to their family lawyers. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Khartoum.
The rights group says Sudan's National Intelligence and Security Service has been detaining a dozen student activists since May 5th without any charges. The rights group say, aside from the 12 students, authorities have also refused access to lawyers for three other detained students accused of attacking a police officer during protests at the University of Khartoum. Saleh Mahmoud is a Khartoum-based human rights lawyer.
The most important issue related to this kind of incommunicado detentions are we are always worried about their safety, physical and psychological security of the people, because experience shows that incommunicado detention, in addition to the possibility of subjecting the detainees to torture, is also a torture for their families, their lawyers, their friends, because they are denied access.
At the time of their arrest, 10 of the students had been dismissed from their studies at the University of Khartoum for allegedly taking part in protests against a possible financial deal to sell the university on the Blue Nile to investors who would convert the campus into a tourist attraction. The 10 students were meeting with lawyers in Amarat in Khartoum on May 5th to discuss an administrative appeal to the dismissals when security officers stormed the lawyers' offices and arrested them. The rights group say 2 days later, two other student activists who were kicked out of the University of Khartoum for allegedly participating in protests were detained in Al Jazeera University and handed over to security service agents in Khartoum.
Most of these people are held without definite charges or specific charges. So the demand is always either to release them or to bring them to the court.
Sudanese government spokesman Ahmed Bilal says the government will investigate the matter and bring criminal charges against the detained students in a court of law.
They will be presented to the court of law because, you know, the violence which happened between the students, two students were being killed. And now the accusations for some which we found weapons with them, arms with them, they are going to be presented to court. And this is not political allegations, but it is a criminal accusation for them.
Bilal flatly denies allegations of torture or ill treatment of any detained political rights activist in Sudan.
We are very responsible government. We are not treating our people with aggressions and humiliation and torture.
According to the three human rights groups, a total of 17 students were dismissed from the University of Khartoum after they participated in nationwide student protests that began at the University of Khartoum last month. On April 19th and 27th, two student activists, Abu Bakr Hassan and Muhammad Siddiq Wayo, were killed in two separate incidents when government forces used live ammunition to disperse demonstrators on university campuses. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, refugees continue to flow into South Sudan from southern Kordofan. We'll have more on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is saving money easy or hard for you?
Saving money has always been an easiest thing for me. I think it's just in blood. I actually have friends who always, they always tell me I'm a much saver than a spender.
Saving money is not easy. Reason? In this world, we have a lot of challenges whereby economic, sometimes it is high and down.
It is not easy to save money these days because I don't have a stable job, so it's very hard for me.
I don't have a job yet. I don't know if it will be hard or easy for me, but I have been looking for a job for 2 years. If I get a job, I make sure it's safe.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. And now for some breaking news from Cairo. The crash of an Egyptian air flight en route to Cairo from Paris was more likely caused by a terrorist attack than a technical failure, Egypt's aviation minister says. As Edward Iranian reports from Cairo, Sherif Al-Fatihi made the comments in response to a question at a press conference in the Egyptian capital, Cairo.
Several relatives of the passengers of the doomed Egypt Air passenger jet cried as they walked outside the Cairo airport terminal building where relatives were meeting with doctors and airline personnel. A somber mood prevailed in the streets of the Egyptian capital as word that wreckage from the flight from Paris to Cairo had been found by Greek rescue vessels not far from the coast of Crete. Residents of Cairo tell VOA that they suspect that the plane was brought down by an act of terrorism. Egypt's civil aviation minister, Sherif Fathi, said France would be responsible for any security lapse if terrorism is confirmed to be the cause of the crash.
If it's proven that this was an act of sabotage, then we have to know and recognize that this plane originated from France, not from Egypt.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi met with top officials Thursday morning to discuss the information that was filtering in about the Egypt airplane and how to react. Egyptian officials said privately that they were concerned that bad publicity about the crash could further impact the country's already fragile tourism sector. A Russian Metrojet plane crashed over the Sinai last October, causing both Russia and Britain to suspend flights to the Sinai resort town of Sharm el-Sheikh. Another Egypt Air domestic flight was hijacked to Cyprus in March. Terrorist attacks in the Egyptian resort towns of Luxor and Hurghada last year have also impacted negatively on the tourism sector. Islamic militant groups have been active in most of Egypt's neighbors, and both al-Qaeda and Islamic State affiliates in Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Libya, and Tunisia have perpetrated powerful waves of suicide attacks in recent days and weeks. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
One of the 218 underage girls kidnapped 2 years ago by Boko Haram at a Chibok school in April 2014 met today with the Nigerian President Muhammad Buhari. Amina Ali Nikki is the only one of the girls abducted from a school in Chibok to be rescued. She was found 2 days ago south of Maiduguri with her four-month-old baby. She was with a man who claimed to be her husband, but is suspected being a member of the Boko Haram. Reuters reports the girl was accompanied today by her mother and Nigeria's defense minister and national security advisor. President Buhari has been under pressure since taking office to find the kidnapped girls. During his 2015 campaign, he vowed to crush Boko Haram. The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says more South Sudanese refugees are crossing the border into South Sudan in recent weeks. The UNHCR spokesman in Juba says officials have registered more than 2,000 Sudanese refugees in the past 2 weeks of this month alone. The refugees are fleeing from Sudan's southern Kordofan state into Yedda refugee camp in the former Unity state. Gift Friday has this report for VOA from Juba.
UNHCR Public Information Officer Roko Nuri says the recent influx brings the number of new arrivals since the beginning of January to more than 6,700. Nuri says the refugees tell aid workers wearing accounts of their villages being repeatedly bombed by government planes.
When they arrive at the Ida Transit Center, they tell our staff on the ground that they have fled hunger, they have fled ground attack, they have fled aerial bombardment. And South Sudan represents the closest place where they can seek asylum and have a safer place for themselves and their children.
90% of the refugees are women and children. Nuri says the new arrivals often tell UNHCR officials they have worked for days and are in dire need of food, water and shelter. Nuri says the UN Refugee Agency is operating on a limited budget.
Nearly 6 months into 2016, and our budget remains funded at only 17%. So you can imagine that some of the activities, some of the services that we provide, including basic services, are being threatened by this situation.
Nuri says UN agencies working in South Sudan have developed a strategy aimed at increasing refugees' access to livelihood opportunities in order to reduce dependency on humanitarian aid. He says, in spite of the challenges facing South Sudan, the country remains a relative safe haven for nearly 1 million refugees from neighboring countries.
On behalf of UNHCR, a big credit and a big thank you goes to South Sudan as a country and the South Sudanese people for sharing their land and their resources with those who are in need of asylum.
Yida and Ajongtok refugee camps in the former Unity State are hosting 100,000 Sudanese refugees who are escaping fighting between the SPLA North and the Sudan government in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile states. Nuri says another 130,000 other refugees are spread across four other camps in the Upper Nile. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
Kenyan police are coming under fire for their brutal response to an opposition protest on Monday. Lenin Ruvaga reports for VOA from Nairobi that photos and video of police beating protesters have sparked outrage.
3 Mondays in a row, Kenya's main opposition coalition has demonstrated at the Electoral Commission in Nairobi, calling for it to be disbanded before next year's polls. Each time, riot police dispersed protesters with tear gas and water cannons. But this week, police kicked and clubbed protesters as they ran, according to photos and videos posted online. Those include images of an officer stomping on an unconscious man's head. The man survived, but Kenyans have taken to Twitter to react with the hashtag #StopPoliceBrutality. Nairobi Governor Evans Kidero called for swift action.
We've said that the Police Oversight Authority must investigate this, and the people who meted out violence against innocent people who were engaging in peaceful protest must be prosecuted.
This is not the first time the police have been accused of abuses. The Independent Medical Legal Unit, IMLU, released a study late last year that found police were responsible for nearly 300 gun-related killings since the start of 2014. Executive Director of the Kenya Human Rights Commission, KHRC, George Kegoro, says excessive use of force cannot be tolerated.
We would like to get assurances from the police department that as the country heads towards election and the mobilization of large crowds happens, this is not going to be the kind of response that we see from the police department. So we must celebrate and preserve the rights of citizens to protest.
The Independent Policing Oversight Authority, IPOA, is looking into Monday's violence, according to board member Tom Kagwe.
Already investigations have been launched, and we will see which officers was culpable. If we can't find the particular individual who is culpable, we will file a case with the highest responsibility in line of command.
The Inspector General of Police has also ordered an investigation, though activists say similar orders in recent years have yielded little action or reform. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
New data show life expectancy rose by 5 years between 2000 and 2015, the fastest increase since the 1960s. But the World Health Organization, which has just issued its latest World Health Statistics report, finds major inequalities persist both within and among countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
While people are living on average of 5 years longer now than before the turn of the century, the World Health Organization says major gaps remain. This is borne out by statistics, which show people in 12 developed countries can expect to live 82 years or more compared to people in 22 developing countries who die before they reach age 60. Switzerland, Iceland, Australia, Sweden, and Israel are the five countries with the highest life expectancy at birth, while Chad, Ivory Coast, Central African Republic, Angola, and Sierra Leone are the lowest ranked. Although five African countries are at the bottom of the rankings, the WHO reports the greatest increase in life expectancy since 2000 has been made in the African region. Tees Burma, WHO's Director of Information, Evidence and Research, says life expectancy has risen by 9.4 years to 60 years in Africa. He says that is mainly due to improvements in child survival, progress in malaria control, and expanded access to antiretroviral treatment of HIV. He tells VOA that although the gap in life expectancy between Africa and Europe remains large, inroads in narrowing it are being made.
The difference between Europe and Africa in life expectancy is, in 2015, 17 years. 78 years in Europe, 61 years in Africa. In the year 2000, it was 5 years bigger. I think with these kind of figures, one can see how much progress has been made, and that continuing, you know, along this road would really make major progress.
On average, the report says women live longer than men in every country of the world. Overall, women can expect to live to nearly 74 years of age, 4.5 years longer than men. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. And we have an update on that Egypt airplane crash. There are reports this hour that wreckage has been found from the Egypt airplane crash. The Egypt Air Twitter account is reporting this past few minutes that life jackets and other floating material has been spotted. The Egypt Air also says that the reason for the disappearance has not yet been confirmed. A UN official is calling on South Sudan's transitional government of national unity to improve conditions in the political arena so that a transitional justice mechanism can be put in place, as stipulated in the August peace agreement. The head of the Human Rights Division of UNMISS says thousands of people still remain in UN camps across the country, which does not bode well for full implementation of the agreement. UNMISS Director for Human Rights Eugene Nandarera says government leaders should show some political will and arrest those who break the law so that people feel safe to leave UN camps and can return home. Nandarera also wants government and armed opposition leaders to enforce unfettered access of human rights workers to remote areas. And two South Sudanese rights groups say thousands of men who committed rape and other sexual crimes during the conflict are not being arrested. That's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Homeless by the Kenyan Boys Choir. We have been listening to the Kenyan Boys Choir with the song Homeless. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Somebody sing, hello, hello, hello. Somebody say, somebody cry.